So I just want to summarize this panel so far. So I'm going to not be tenured unless I get 6 years industrial experience. My students are going to live with me. They have to work in a different area. I'm just trying to see whether.
Think about it. You know, I heard Ravi say that they hired so many people. Yes, that's true, of course, obviously. But what happens next year when there's a freeze in Dallas?
They break up into two more.
This is not a solution. In fact, the solution seems to be hiding at the moment. They have nothing to do with computer science. Absolutely nothing at all. You know, there is no, this is not a cause and effect relationship here. You get a degree in computer science, you'll get a job in Lucent. Maybe not.
James, one of the basic problems that was posed was there seems to be more PhDs being produced than what the country is able to solve. Now, it doesn't look like they're taking up to address that, but what can we do about it? There are more PhDs than needed. So what is the solution to avoid that problem?
I don't think you should stop producing PhDs, you should just produce better PhDs. And let the law of natural selection take its course. And proposing a constructive solution to that problem, that I think that if we stop producing PhDs with the same technical sort of idea that we had 5 or 10 years ago when we did our own PhD, we would have a better chance of producing people who actually are doing something different than you.
I had a different question. I've heard some of the sentiments expressed before on this issue, that is, people want a PhD to show that the receiver or recipient understands how to frame a research problem and work their way through a research problem, and that she can reach some type of solution and write it up in a cogent style. So there's some sort of depth knowledge there, but then industrial people seem to also want this breadth idea. Somehow the person shouldn't just know what their PhD is about, but should have some breadth. So I would like to hear the panelists address the issue, the question, how are we supposed to educate these people, and what is the time frame that they envision for gaining that sort of breadth and depth in the PhD program?
Let me take a crack at this since we're discussing this very question at Columbia in terms of the design of our PhD degree, recognizing the fact that most graduates will not get a job like their advisors. And we can design breadth into the curriculum, and we are designing breadth into the curriculum, starting off with what kind of qualifying or preliminary examinations or what kind of material a student should know in order to consider him or herself a PhD in computer science. And I think most schools have some breadth requirements, but I think these breadth requirements are going to become increasingly important in terms of knowledge. Another thing I've noticed is that students from the top schools tend to do interesting projects during the summer that are often unrelated to their PhD thesis. And I think that's going to become even more important for the future. When I was at Bell Labs in Belcourt, I noticed that the students who had done 3 or 4 projects during the course of their PhD degree, one of them was their PhD thesis, but the other 2 or 3 were things that they had done either in the university or working with industry. These were the students that were startling, because whenever they went into someone's office as part of the interview, they could talk meaningfully about whatever that person was working on. And those were the students that tend to get the offers. So one could also take Mark's more radical proposal, saying that maybe we ought to look at more of a collaboration between industry and academia. In fact, I noticed everyone on this panel said that. Maybe Dick, but even Dick has an association with industry, have had some association with academia and some association with industry. And I think that lays kind of more of the north. There's a very interesting report that was written by Brooks and Sutherland, where they're the co-editors of this report, and it was a response to the government's criticism of the HPC program that the research community had embarked on. And what this report did was look at a couple of dozen multi-billion dollar a year industries today and looked at where the ideas that created these multi-billion dollar a year industries came from. So one of the industries was workstations. So where were workstations invented? What was the interplay of ideas that caused workstations to become such a big commercial product? And for every one of these new computer or information technology companies, they noticed that there was an interplay of ideas between academia and research, research labs, industrial research labs. So in some cases, the ideas may have initially been invented by somebody at an industrial research lab, but then it had a gestation period in academia, like Unix is a very good example of that. In other cases, an idea was invented by an academic researcher and then picked up by an industrial research lab, then it was re-nourished by academia, and then finally appeared on the marketplace. So I think, particularly for the area of computing and information technology, this isn't a bad model. And being able to train students or educate students so they can function in this kind of environment will be one answer to what will PhDs in the future do. They'll have a much more fluid career, perhaps, but there certainly will be exciting opportunities for people who can hold in this kind of economy.
I just want to give a call, Mark. I think this breadth is a really important problem. I think we talk a lot also at Princeton about this. I think we do a really lousy job of this, frankly. At Princeton and probably everywhere else, students tend to get pretty narrowed pretty quickly. They don't go to talks. The title somehow doesn't, overlap 50% with the title of the thesis. They're very narrow, and I think it's a real shame. And I think we've also seen this on the qualifier exam. I have one story I have to share with you. One year we were grading our exam, and we of course have a theory component, and there's a systems component, there are other components. And I suddenly noticed the following. There was a theory question about depth-first search, just, certain kind of graph algorithms that are important. And there was a system question about garbage collection. They had the same answer. Literally, the same exact answer. Of course, in one you have to talk about depth-first search trees, the other one you have to talk about things like garbage collection. So you have to change the terminology slightly. Now, we have, 10 students taking it. The 5 theory students, guess which one they got right? 0 points on the other question, and the 5 system, exactly. It wasn't funny, but it is. I finally said to my colleagues who were writing the exam, this is bizarre. We all go, oh, it's pretty interesting. And it was really, it's a shame. But I think students, one of the disservices, I don't know how to teach students, I don't know if anyone here has a better plan. When you get a problem, it's not labeled systems in the real world. It's not labeled, theory. The problems just come to you. I told my colleagues, I think we should have a multi-day exam and we should shuffle the questions. And on day one, you should get 10 questions or 4 or whatever. And maybe some are theory and some are systems. And you should figure it out, because that's part of the thing. And I'm sure in Mark's lab or anyone else's, when, someone comes in with an interesting puzzle or question about designing a new system, it's not labeled, queuing theory applied, here. That's just not the way it works. And I think we don't do a very good job of that. I think we need to work harder, and it's important that the students are deep in one area to prove they can get deep in here because, as I said earlier, the areas are going to change, and they have to demonstrate that. But they sure have to have some ability to at least know a lot about a lot of different things. And I think we just don't do a good job of that.
Let me just, I'll put that in the slogan. The academia, your job in academia is making broad. In industry, we know how to make it deep. We'll do that. We'll narrow the students down for you. But you need to give us broad students to do that.
I
just wanted to mention also, I think the point you're making about the hiring we have done on people for because I gave you the statistics for how many people you hired. I didn't tell you how many dinners you candidates and how many candidates you got. Because there were days when there were three candidates. I'm trying to keep them from running into each other. What it boils down to is we were very selective, and selectivity was based a lot on threat and one way of thinking about it is that you've seen people who have learned a technique and they're going around the world looking for problems they can solve with that technique. Everything looks like a nail question you have ahead. The problems we get in industry don't come labeled, as you were saying, right? And there are times when you have to develop techniques to solve those problems. So it's not entirely just knowing the large areas, it's also what is your viewpoint, how receptive are you at being able to look at the problem that's being posed and then not get stuck in, well, I'm good at this sort of thing, or I do X, Y, Z, and I'm going to solve that portion of the problem. And you solve the whole problem.
And
what
talk about IT?
I'm sorry, there was. Yeah, he was raising his hand for a while.
Okay.
I would like to suggest something like what I heard here. One is that the maybe you can consider a need to have an internship for PhD students as part of their requirements to get PhD, because then they get exposed to industry and the industry gets exposed to you. And then also, I guess that the business is going to make the connections between you and the industry and the industry more close. And the other thing is that I'm not sure about this is a bad for you. Somebody that has a bad idea and then you're at the university or students that have directly with the same bad idea. I mean the fact that somebody finishes PhD and you need a doctor, I doesn't necessarily mean that you can also train other people doctors. I mean, and
but it happens in computer science all the time, right?
I'm
not sure it's
good.
I'm not sure it's good. No, here's the answer. I mean, if you think about it, we've hired many people, actually a lot from Rutgers itself, over the last few years. Many of them who come with a PhD degree have a great reluctance to work on something other than what they were working on in the PhD. Somehow, getting a degree in, let's say, you know, topic X, gives them the moral right to sort of work on topic X for the next 3 years. This is actually bad, because topic X may have nothing to do with what Lucent or Dalcour or Bellas has as its main goal of business. So this goes back to what Barbara was saying, is you may have the depth, but you have a great reluctance to work on something else for some strange and bizarre reason, because you think that you spent 3 years trying to get a PhD degree. Therefore, you now must spend the next 5 years on the same topic, for good or for bad. We don't, but normally people won't tell you this when you first hire them.
Yeah, I
want to
say it's totally different position. I don't think there's anything wrong with the system. We could make a pretty strong argument there isn't. How many unemployed PhDs are there around? I think very few. It's not a risky kind of thing to do from a job security point of view. What are people doing? I suspect most are actually working in the field. If there isn't an academic job or existing research labs out there, either they go off and start their own company or...
No, for most of them actually end up on Wall Street doing a little bit of programming.
But overall, I don't think it's an unhealthy thing. Now, and that's a good thing. You don't think any of us are in positions to do anything about it anyway. I mean, universities are, as we heard today, and I think most other universities are all trying to jockey for position, make it more attractive for students to come there, expand their programs in the area. The only way these systems stop would be if
research fund are completely cut off, and since those come from different places, which are also trying to feed their influence, that's not likely to happen either. Cautionary note, I think there is a, the time costs are huge. In the 80s, people went into investment banking, that was a hot thing to do, and computer science enrollments dried up, and so maybe 7 or 8 years later, there might have been a shortage of computer science PhDs. Now there seems to be a lot of people in computer science, and maybe we really will have a problem, I don't know. But that's a sort of separate issue. I'm not sure, but go back to the thinking. I'm not really sure there's a problem. The market forces may take a while to balance things out, but there's value, I think, to PhDs in part. It's related to what Mark said about being somewhat crazy. In order to get through a PhD, you do have to solve a number of problems, only one portion of which is actually the technical one. It requires some sort of resourcefulness, and I think that's probably a useful life skill, both for the assistance, the ability to do a project, something which has a kind of coherence prior to completion. It involves writing also, which is really rather different from the research. Fairly reasonable training for any range of things, not just research.
Any more?
I thought somehow to that discussion of problem, so first of all, you mentioned having a need to find the students who want to do. Especially like research study, like the field or the lab, to hire people to do research with. At university, if you want to carry your research, you're looking for students to collaborate with you. So this is the source for expanding your, research choices or from one area to another. So you look for PhD students who work with you and introduce PhD students who in turn want to become professors. And you can start with machinery. This is how the academia was defined originally and will not change.
Actually, this was not the way academia was defined originally. This is a recent invention in the last 70 years. So I think Heidelberg University was the first one in 1912, that first one promulgated the idea of university professors doing research as a part of the official job description. Well, yeah, it's a fact now, but this is not the way it has always been.
So you can change and go back to the original idea?
When most people do the PhD, they don't have six students working for them. So why do you need six students after the PhD to do your work with you?
I don't think this is a
Well, there is a big change that has taken place, and that is the Cold War has ended. And a lot of American research was fueled by the rubric of national security. Now, what replaces national security as the rubric for people wanting to fund research? And government funding for research is going to go down. So I think for universities to be interesting, you have to have a closer collaboration with industry, and that requires a different kind of activity than I think we had before.
It's the funding is going to be coming from the TV people and the film people and the Hollywood people. This is where the funding is coming from now, last year, and where it's going to come from in the future. This changes the ballgame.
To respond to the previous question, I submit that getting the students working on problems that you can run into, this is a I understand that's what happens, but I don't believe that that's the best motivation for having the students. And you're not necessarily doing the students a service. I think that it's important for your sake, as well as the students, to have one motivated problem that people are working on. And if the problem, the remarks about bread that we apply to people we hire I believe that those are good things to aspire for in all research.
And so I wanted to respond to what David said just a second ago. It's not the case that PhDs come from jobs. Yes, they can, but a lot of PhDs aren't really doing research jobs.
No, that was a question.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to follow up on. I think what one thing that needs to happen is that there needs to be it needs to be made clearer to students entering the PhD process at this point that the world has changed. Now, I just graduated, so I entered 7 years ago, and what I was told at that time is the only reason you should be doing PhD, the only reason you should be in a PhD program is if you anticipate doing research at a university level. That's really the only thing. Otherwise, you should be getting a master's degree. I think in light of the panel and other things that I've read, clearly something has changed, but I'm not sure that message has been has yet made it out throughout the field to graduate students. There may be many things now that PhDs do that were not once considered to be jobs that PhDs ought to be doing, or things that were something that you should not necessarily aspire to. So I think it's true that there are jobs out there, but I think that we need to rethink what a PhD is going to be doing in the marketplace today.
Well, roughly a few minutes ago, that he has noticed that the research cycle, research to development cycle, has gone from something like 13 years to actually 2 or 3 years. But I think it's much more than that. It's down for a few months. If you look at the world of the internet and the web, you find people having an idea, getting venture capital money within 48 hours, and within 3 months having a beta somewhere on our website.
And in 6 months they've gone public and they're millionaires and they retire and endow a chair in Australia.
On the other hand, I have friends who sit around writing a paper for Sigmar for 2 months. This is crazy. This is absolutely crazy.
So how many of those who brought up the system, read up the search agreement, had been achieved?
Who cares? Who cares, no?
Yes, sir. Probably did it.
I want to be some global student. I'm sorry.
I was going to suggest some questions on the I saw one of the problems with this application in the public field. So, it's a little way to. I know a lot of people who have a master's or PhD degree in other fields. It's a good way to recruit more kind of people into undergrad, a graduate program in full time. So these people already know the problem of that, or know that what the career time wants to help in this year.
One of the motivations in Washington right now is to encourage interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary research. The theory is that there are some problems that require skills from different areas and are too big for any single individual or single area to make progress in. And one of these areas that computer science and academics involves in is the area of genomics, molecular biology. And there I see some very fruitful collaborations between computer scientists and biologists starting to be established. And my hope for this arena would be that computer scientists working with a biologist will win a Nobel Prize for work in either community by themselves. And there are other areas in which computer science, I think, could also be perceived in an equal partnership role. However, to make progress in this arena, we need computer scientists who are all knowing the respective both of computer scientists, and then you can also hold their own and be respected as scientists in the other profession. I haven't seen this kind of breadth in computer science as much as I'd like to. The physicists, on the other hand, which has had no problem of saying, well, this is all policy. And in some cases, it may run significant contributions to computer science and other disciplines. So again, this issue of breadth comes there. But getting a PhD in this kind of multidisciplinary activity has the problem that where are you going to job? If you do a job in computational biology, you then get a job in the computer science department or in the biology department. So I would strongly recommend people to have very strong PhDs in these fields so they can be endured by both the biologists and the computer scientists.
Well,
I think
it's an
The practical matter of this is to destroy companies snapping these people up left and right.
Actually, it's very strange because it is quite easy, in fact, to do a if you're doing a multi-discipline program, simply fall in the cracks and you end up doing neither. So you're neither a computer scientist nor a pharmacist. And I actually had this sort of experience. I was listening to a talk given by a friend of mine in what used to be Bell Labs, and I didn't understand the talk. And I went up to the speaker afterwards, and he said, "What's your name? You don't understand the talk because you're not a linguist." So I said, "Okay, fine. Thank you very much." And a few months later, he gave the same talk, and there was a linguist in the audience, and I asked him to go and ask him what he And he said, "Oh, Ken Church, you don't understand because you're not a database person." So, you know, it's very easy to fall in this crack. That's what you have to watch out for. Multidisciplinary is very hard to do.
Well, I just want to add that my remarks about Brett were not really that I was hoping that people would have biology and computer science. It really was that even within a given area, even say within databases or within networking, having an understanding of how does my work fit into the whole. Now, it's like a fisheye lens. You know, if you've seen pictures of fisheye lenses, wherever the focus is seems to be very large, and the rest recedes into the distance. And when we spend a long time working on a specific problem, that problem can often take on a life of its own. And it's important to have perspective on where your work is.
Yes. The question I have is a quick dive at the thought of the original question that Thomas was asking regarding the New York Times article. I sympathize a lot with the point you're raising about diseases being sometimes pursuing that idea further and in fact through a number of pressures in finishing a PhD time and so forth and sometimes forcing someone in that direction. But what I do not understand is the following. Why is it given as a underlying assumption of this discussion that it's only to be one type of professional degree or PhD degree? Why not a two types of degrees, one which would be something in between a master's and a PhD at third degree, which would not have a thesis option, which would have maybe an industrial internship component, while we still would have a separate, and we'll say we are not the computer science department, mathematics department, but the same kind of issues arise in the other departments. Why not having a path that does lead to avant-garde research, and we do need people, obviously, that are willing to go into far-out ideas, and who are willing to spend the 7 or whatever number of years doing work to do something really significant, but also have another path, another career option, maybe a three-year degree, where you would be producing kind of people that some that brands are needing in some of these research laboratories. And the question is two parts. Number one, is that a feasible thing to do? And number two, if you have the second kind of degree, how exactly do you make these people that are going to do that, through what exact mechanism do you make them learn, for instance, how to communicate, which is something that you achieve through research and presentation, but you do not through standard taking of courses.
Just to add to this, I mean, I think that, you know, that the requirement of that, again, would probably extend farther the time to do a PhD. We are constantly facing this question. Well, for example, you know, if we let students start on the research area, when they publish area, they finish area. If we say, well, that is important, take more courses, you know, expand, of course it takes longer time to the PhD. So I would second Eduardo that in a way what you're talking about is if you need grads, I mean, it seems to call for a non-thesis degree, which would respond to essentially grads, you know, better education, you know, professional degree. If you look for a research job, that calls for a PhD thesis.
Well, there are two degrees. One is called the MPhil and one is called the PhD. Right. Both don't require a thesis to be written.
Mike Phillips.
Yes, I had a philosophy of the argument earlier, which I clarified. It was mentioned that change to us writing a sigmoid paper is changed. Can you explain that explanation to me?
No, I didn't say that writing it was crazy, but I said that the world in which in 2 months you can go from taking an idea all the way to perhaps a successful launch of a new multi-million dollar company and spending 2 months writing a sigmoid paper, this world is totally crazy.
So thank you.
No, I'm not passing any value judgment on this or that. I'm simply saying that these are two worlds, and look at how crazy this world is, that you can go and operate in this
world.
No, no. But I have to say more paper, which I've been working on. I think that my professor is on the program committee, so I don't
I want to respond to the question that was being raised, the remark about a non-thesis degree where you spend 3 years. I'm not sure I see that much difference between spending 3 years and taking a few more courses and having picked up more information at your fingertips and getting a master's and getting a job and spending the same year working on some different projects and picking up the background that you need and the breadth that you need. So if you're going to do away with the thesis, why not stop with a master's?
Question?
Actually, yes. Let's see other examples of educational systems.
Yes,
me?
No, yes, sir.
Yeah, sir. So I kind of combined with remarks about getting rid of a degree or not. Look at the European academic and high school systems, particularly in countries like Germany or France. The division into those who can graduate higher or those who are kind of destined for vocational market begins very early, sometimes at age 12. Is Europe any better off? I don't know, but there is a comparison. I think it's openness that if you start a graduate program, you can get your PhD if you want to, makes America much more dynamic and open. So I have no problem having a degree. After all, it's a student who's waiting 7 years. Your degree is not going to do anything for you. But nobody's problem.
You're going
to go take it. One sentence more. Second thing is, I'm sort of surprised that there is a problem with graduates going to Wall Street or something. Hey, they are making 100 grand and they are doing a very interesting work. Preferably more interesting than most of the professors. So this is the academic spirit of commitment. Why do we think there's a problem in our lack of cloning?
Well, I think we should have him on the panel next time. There may be another reason why this PhD is sort of sought after by students, and it goes back to the statement I made a little bit earlier that a lot of these PhD students are actually foreign students, and there's a cultural value associated with having a PhD degree in many cultures. Frankly, if you came to me and said, you can spend 3 years and we'll give you a degree without a thesis and we'll call it something like a DSC, or you can spend another 6 months and write a thesis and we'll give you a PhD. There isn't much guessing as to which way I go.
Now, especially in this time, people are competing, master's swing when they are getting jobs. So, what do you see here is that PhD people will continue to be on the top of master's people when they are in a job, or they can go ahead as far as the head game, as far as the start game?
Well, I'll tell you a couple of things. We know I think the job market has gotten a little better at academic job market than a few years ago, but one of the things that in systems especially, we noticed, I mean, students are taking longer and also doing postdocs, you know, call it something else, and when they're finally getting to our door to look for an assistant professorship, have many more results, many more papers, and, you know, sometimes in meetings we have to say, oh, that person's been out for 3 years, you know, working in Hennessy's lab, and this person is finishing tomorrow. Gee, maybe that's not fair to compare them, you know, one against the other in terms of maturity, in terms of number of papers. So I think there's a lot of pressure on students to get to good academic jobs that really do more, stay more in the pipeline, which is just, you know, maybe that's not good, maybe it is, but that's certainly one of the realities that we see in this system. I just one other thing about this whole system that she mentioned about why, you know, the whole PhD is because, I mean, if you want to, well, I don't know if anyone's mentioned this, but, I mean, the real reason we have PhD candidates at Princeton, I mean, Princeton has a single product that we make, and we're one of the best in the world, you know, Columbia's very good too, and so we create undergraduate alums, and it's a huge resource for us, and, you know, we love them, and you know, that's what our real business is, to do undergraduates. Without PhD students, we would not have teaching assistants. There's tremendous pressure on us to have a PhD program to have students to stay up our classes. If we didn't have an undergraduate program, we'd probably have a lot less PhD students. Or if we didn't have a PhD program, we'd have a lot of trouble staffing our classes. I mean, we pride ourselves only having faculty teach, but, you know, there's still a lot of other infrastructure that's needed to run large classes. And I don't know if it's that different at Rutgers, but I'm sure there's tremendous pressure to have the large PhD program to man your large 6,400 enrollments a year. I mean, you need to do that. So it's, you know, it's great. I like to have people to work with, but the department sees a huge pressure. And I think that nationally, there's a lot of pressure on us to do that, to make the institution quality. And, you know, unless you're going to change that, you know, part of the equation, you're going to have a continual pressure to create lots of PhDs at
great companies. You got to hire them and pay 25 times a year who wants to use them.
No, but they do. We always have faculty. I mean, we're, you know, there are a lot of good places that don't do that. But, you know, graders and TAs and, you know, people doing many terminal rooms. And, yeah, but all of those things are traditionally, in most places, done by our graduates and our teaching assistants. And we're seeing, you know, more of those available to the department. There's more pressure on us to probably bring in more. We, for example, this fall, we could not man all our teaching slots. We just literally did not have enough graduate students to fill the slots. We had to go across the street to get some people to help with one of the beginning classes. I mean, they're fine, you know, when they're good people, but it's out of our department. I mean, I'm just saying, we could have supported more people. And I'm sure you must have similar things here.